Hi everyone, and welcome back to Lit Radio Podcast. I'm Thea, and today I've got the pleasure of welcoming Benjamin Thiel Long. We'll talk about his book, How to Be Utterly Brilliant at Public Speaking, Presenting, and Talking to the Media. As both a qualified barrister and a communications consultant, Benjamin has over 20 years of experience as a trusted advisor to the leaders of some of the world's largest organizations. Whether you're a C-suite leader, communications advisor, or simply want to turbocharge your career by improving your communication skills, this book is for you. Cutting straight to the point with practical and immediately applicable advice and examples, this desk-side guide will become your trusted companion to achieving utter brilliance as a speaker and presenter. Hi, Benjamin. It's a great pleasure to have you with us on Lit Radio Podcast. How are you today?
Really well, thank you. And thank you so much for having me on. It's a real pleasure to be here.
Well, it's absolute pleasure to have you. And I'm really excited to talk with you about your book, How to Be Utterly Brilliant at Public Speaking, Presenting, and Talking to the Media. But before we do that, let me ask you about your background, because you've got a very interesting background. You were first a barrister and then a communications consultant. So how did that happen? And also how all of that experience shaped your understanding of effective communication?
Yes, I have been very fortunate to have something of a wild background in terms of career trajectory, but it's interesting when I get asked this question, the similarities between the two professions rather than the differences are actually the most striking feature. I started as a criminal barrister. I was called to the bar 20 years ago now. And I knew since I was 10 years old, growing up in rural Wiltshire, this is what I wanted to do. I was fascinated by the profession. I was fascinated by the criminal justice system, but I was also really in awe of the role of the barrister as an advocate in the courtroom. And in unlike systems across the world, the British system is very much designated, or certainly was then, between solicitors and barristers. Barristers primarily applying their trade in the courtroom, and just the way that they conducted cases, they managed cases, but spoke on behalf of their clients. And that's what I did. I focused on that and was called to the bar, yes, 2006, and spent 10 years at the criminal bar, all range of cases, predominantly criminal, some larger fraud trials and things like that. I was very, very lucky. I have appeared in all courts of first instance, as we call them, so magistrates' courts and the Crown Court, as well as courts martial, doing cases involving members of the armed services, the armed forces, and also been to the Court of Appeal a few times. And that was a real quick lesson, because you have to get skilled very quickly at being an advocate and learning cases and learning the nuances of them, of really the ability to digest information very quickly, to understand what's relevant and what's not, how to understand good facts, bad facts, and really find your way through a narrative or a case very quickly, and then, you know, really focus on your delivery. And it was interesting when I knew that I was going to move to America with my family about 10 years ago. I had no desire to take the criminal bar in California. I did not want to go through all of that again. And actually found that there were a lot of communications agencies that needed people with my skills, meaning the legal skills, but also primarily the communication and the written and oral advocacy skills. And it translated very well into a profession in corporate communications. So I've been doing that for just over 10 years. Started in London, worked with a number of different agencies, representing large companies across the world, from UK, Europe, but also Asia and America. And that led me to moving to America, first in New York and then the West Coast. And I, you know, I won't list all of them, but when you work with companies like ING, Zurich, Willis Towers Watson, Target, Marriott, Wendy's, you really are playing at the top of your game in terms of communications, both, you know, with press releases, engaging with the media, engaging with stakeholders, investors, and internal communications, which I know we'll talk a little bit about today. just really learning my skill as a communications advisor and a consultant. And most recently, I was in-house at a company called Petco. It's one of America's largest pet retailers and service providers, and I finished as chief communications officer there, and that was just a fabulous time being there in that role and the type of work that I got to do. And so those two parts of my careers, each spanning a decade, have really formed, an understanding of good communication, of good advocacy in speaking, which is then translated into helping other people learn what I learn.
Absolutely. And yeah, as I said, it's a very interesting background, which I think also well makes the insights in the book very engaging and very fascinating. But now, yeah, talking about the book, why did you decide to write it?
It was really two things. The first being the greater of hearing so many people that I worked with, or friends or colleagues for that matter, that when I described what I did, would immediately say, "Oh, I can't do that. I can't talk to a crowd. I can't get up on a stage. I can't do that. I just can't do that." And you see this sort of almost quite visceral reaction from people sometimes at the idea of having to speak publicly, and of course they're thinking about big keynote speeches, but even leading a group meeting or talking in a group can cause so many people so much anxiety. And I think when I think about both parts of my career, but particularly the career at the bar, of course, the obvious answer is, well, you've had the confidence to do it, therefore it's easy for you. It's actually not really about the confidence. It's what the bar taught me of how to frame your thoughts, organize your ideas, think about delivery. And a lot of the leading advocacy tutors, we constantly talk about this idea of persuasion. And it really dawned on me that understanding how to use persuasion when you talk or when you write, understanding how to organize your thoughts, and then the more tactical skills of voice projection, all those things. I was actually incredibly fortunate that I was taught those things in my career. Most of us are not. I don't think, and I make a general assumption for people on this podcast. I'm sure not many people were taught at school public speaking skills. They probably were not taught early in their career how to speak to senior leadership or how to talk to an internal crowd. It's just expected to learn this by osmosis. And it just really dawned on me that what people were saying about, "I can't do that," wasn't really a confidence thing. It was a knowledge thing, and it was a skills-based issue that can be taught. And I've seen it done. I've done it myself. And I thought, if I have the opportunity to take what I have learned and been fortunate and put it into something that people can use day to day, there must be a value in that. And that's really the idea of doing the book in the first instance, and why I wrote the book like I did, because it has a very distinct style.
Absolutely. And I think a lot of people, they believe you're either born with the skill to communicate well or not, whereas you're saying, well, that's not true, and anyone can learn the skills, which I think is probably the most fascinating part.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about, Warren Buffett, one of the wealthiest men in the world, one of those people that is really looked up to as a business leader and investor, he credits, I think it was, maybe 30, 40 years ago, he's paid $100 to do a public speaking course, because he was petrified of it. This was a brilliant, smart man, even 40 years ago. He was absolutely brilliant at what he did, but it petrified him, and he still says that $100 is the best investment he ever made, because that ability to learn those skills, and it is not innate. Yes, people have different levels of confidence. We all do, but the actual fundamentals are not innate. We don't born knowing how to address a crowd. They're skills that are shown and taught to us, and that's what I've tried to bring to life.
Yeah, well, again, that story tells a lot. But before we talk more about the skills that's well you can learn further how to communicate effectively, let's first talk about the writing process, because this is a book podcast. So, and this is your first book. So could you tell us what was it like to write this book?
It was both daunting and chaotic, I think, in equal measure. Daunting because if I was really going to, obviously, I had a huge amount of respect from my peers and people that I'd worked with, but if I was really going to put myself out there as an author, I knew I had to do a really good job and really put my best foot forward in terms of really good, useful advice and skills. And in a way that no one else had done before, because there are other books on public speaking. So I wanted to make sure I did something that was going to really stand out. And so what I wanted to do is write the book that didn't exist. And it's the book that I wish I'd had 10 years ago when I started in communications. It's the book I wish I had all the way through my career over the last 10 years to give to people. And it was chaotic, only in the sense of I had so many things that I wanted to tell people, but it was really important that the way that the book was formulated was really clear, really accessible, and easy to read. And one thing this book is not is a treatise on theory. There is, of course, theory behind the skills and the ideas that I put forward, but this book is not a theory book. It is a practitioner's book for practitioners. And though I think it's fair to say the writing process, in terms of actually putting the ideas down, probably took about 2 months when I was thinking about, 20 years worth of knowledge and insights, and, speaking to peers and friends I'd worked with and said, "What do you remember from my training that you really enjoyed?" And really try to crowdsource what had impact on other people. But then the editing process took three times that, because getting it right, conveying it in a way that was easy to read was important. It was really important as well, from the people that I spoke to, that my style and delivery in the training room came across in the book as well. Really practical, really in the moment. If you're going to suggest something, give a really practical idea immediately of how that works. Otherwise, people are guessing, okay, well, how does it work in my scenario? And with a healthy dose of humor as well. I think, business books are always there to inspire. That's always comes across in different ways. And I put humor in there in terms of the writing style. I've talked about errors that I've made, errors I've seen other people made, to make light of what can happen. But hopefully each of those both instill confidence, but also the skills. And then, I will say, probably a huge, huge shout out to all of the LID team, because the other important part about the book is I wanted it to look a certain way. I remember when I was a junior barrister, there was a fantastic book by Ian Morley called The Devil's Advocate, which you can still buy, of advocacy skills. And every page was a self-contained idea. So you didn't have to wade through the book consistently to remember what was the thing. You can turn and open the book and read a page and learn something or apply something. And I wanted to do that with this as well, because we're all busy people. C-suite leaders, business leaders are busy. If you want to just get yourself ready for a speech or a meeting or a podcast, whatever it may be, I wanted the book to be set out in a way that was easy to read, easy to digest, and you could pick it up and read it all the way through, or you could just open a page and immediately apply something that would immediately improve your public speaking skills. So the process was a really good one, and it helped me focus my own mind and get the book to the way that I think it was always intended to be. That ultimately it's about its usability, which is really the most important part.
Right, absolutely. Yeah, because the thing you want readers to do is to actually understand what you're saying and to be quite easy for them to follow the rules, which I think you really managed to achieve that. But great. So now let's talk about the content of the book. And the first part focuses on the three golden rules of communication. So could you tell us what those rules are?
Yes, I'll tell you what the golden rules are, but I'll start by talking why they exist. Something that I've seen time and time and time again over 20 years is people say, "Oh, I'm speaking at such and such a conference, or I'm speaking to such and such a news outlet. What are my talking points? What am I going to write?" And you think, "Hold on, hold on. Before you even started to upload your PowerPoint deck, why are you speaking in the first place?" And that step is so fundamental to persuasive communication and being really good at it, that if you miss it, it's like a magnet by a compass. You'll just go in the wrong direction really quickly. And one of the things that I've tried to do as a discipline, as an advocate and a comms advisor, and then with the teams that I've worked with, is pause just for 1 minute. What's the purpose? Because that will define how you speak, the type of materials that you use, the content, the anecdotes. All of it is defined by what your outcome is. And the golden rules are essentially three prompts, really, for you to think about and for every public speaker to think about before they put pen to paper. And in a very short form, The first golden rule is that communication is an audience-defined action, meaning very simply, you're not speaking for the sake of it. You are speaking to a particular group of people. Who is in that group of people? What is their knowledge area? What is their area of expertise? What are they expecting? What is the context? If it's a news outlet, what is the editorial focus of this outlet? What is their readership like? If it is a podcast, who listens to it, et cetera, et cetera. And I've seen time and time again where people think that they can just recycle a seminar or a conference or a speech to a different audience. That audience is made of completely different people, and so the content doesn't land, the anecdotes don't work, the slides are wrong, et cetera. So first thing is, who am I actually talking to? And making sure you've got a really firm grasp of that. The second is then, how do you achieve an irresistible outcome? Again, I keep repeating myself, but it's an important point. If you are public speaking in any format, you're not just doing it for the sake of it. You are doing it to achieve an outcome. And for example, I'm here with you on this podcast. The outcome, hopefully, is that people will buy the book. So what is it that we think about in terms of the questions and the answers? But also, it's a little bit more about that. I want this podcast to be, as I was preparing it, a little bit of a confidence booster as well for people to go, maybe I can improve this skill. It's something that can be for me. And so you have to think about, well, what is that outcome that I'm trying to achieve? And I think that it's often missed because it seems so obvious. But that's when it goes wrong. And I think the classic example, all of your listeners can probably picture a time in the last year where they joined a team meeting and halfway through it, they thought, what is the purpose of this meeting? Why are we here? And even a monthly all hands meeting among your peers should have a purpose. You should have actions that you want people to follow as a result of what you have to say, even if they're very simple. But you need to understand what those are so that the content you deliver helps to achieve that outcome. And then the third golden rule is always understanding the narrative that puts those ideas together. You've worked out your audience and who you're speaking to and got a clear view of that. And you've understood what it is that you want them to do as a result of you speaking. What is going to be the thing that binds your ideas and talking points together so that you're not just throwing a load of stats or a load of anecdotes or just jargon? What is going to make that come alive? And I think that the easiest way to bring that to life is everybody can think of either their favorite book or their favorite film that they have watched or read. The reason why that would have been compelling, I'm sure it could have been an action film, it could have been a romance film, it could have been history, it doesn't matter, but you knew the story, you follow the story, you were invested in the story that was being told. That's what we mean by narrative. And sometimes it doesn't have to be terribly complex, sometimes it's a bit more detailed, but really understanding what's going to bind everything together so that what you say actually gels and sits with the mind of the audience. If you think about those three things, those three golden rules every time, it will define what you're going to say and how you're going to say it, and that will set you on the right path to begin with. And I go into more detail about how you can then put that into action. But without that, you're really going to go wrong very, very quickly.
Absolutely, and obviously, our listeners can read more about those rules in the book. But I think they're really, really useful. But then moving on to the second part, which focuses on building your content. So, what are some steps that you can share with us that our listeners can follow so they can make sure the content they're building is going to be well received?
You have to really have a very strong foundation for any public speaking. This podcast, a news interview, an all hands of a town hall, whatever it is, you've got to have a really firm grasp of what that content is, what you're going to be saying, the examples before you even open your mouth. And if you do that and really, really do that to a high level, you will be a much more confident speaker instantly because you know your subject matter. And the amount of people that you see that speak very well on TV, they're often experts in their area, either because they're an academic or because they are have been doing it for 15, 20 years, and they're really certain about it. And you have to think about it in that way. I had a headmaster when I was at school. Beginning of every year, he would say success is 90% perspiration, 10% inspiration. It's the same, it's exactly the same process. So, really bringing your ideas together as I did with this book, you asking me about the process of that. I got all of my ideas together, but that wasn't there for the book. I then had to sit down and I had to think about, well, what are the common themes? What are the themes that are going to bind this together? And I think I really, if I was to give an analogy, think of a sandwich. I love a BLT, bacon, lettuce, tomato. It's a very good and a very good way of visualizing this. Every good piece of public speaking will have an introduction, a way of bringing the audience in. That's your top piece of bread. Then ideally three key topics, your B, your L, your T, and then the bread underneath. What is the call to action that you are leaving the audience with so that they absolutely go and then do the thing you want to do? And that's a very high-level way of describing it, but what it does is it can be a very simple and effective forcing mechanism to put all of your thoughts together, realize what is it that I want to be saying, and how do I order it in a way that is digestible because we're thinking about the narrative. And then you've got a really firm bedrock. And sometimes that structure could be really simple. For example, you could be doing a town hall, end of year town hall with your company. Your three topics could simply be, what has been happening in the industry this year, topic number one. Topic number two, where have the successes been for us as a business this year? And topic three is, what's the strategic plan for next year? Now, that's a very simple structure, but immediately I can probably get 10 talking points organized more consistently within those three headings than if I just rattled them off, even in a chronological order. And that's the forcing mechanism. And the reason why I'm so adamant about it is because most of us, in reality, are visual thinkers. We can, once we've formulated an idea or a structure in our mind, use that to reinforce ourselves. And I have, hand on heart, taught people to do 45-minute talks with no notes whatsoever, because they have been absolutely crystal clear on the structure of their content right from the beginning. And that acts as their route map internally. Now, not everybody will be able to get to that immediately, but I can absolutely guarantee that if you take that time to really structure your thoughts into a coherent narrative in a way that makes sense, your public speaking will immediately jettison. And that's whether it's a 45-minute keynote or a 6-minute interview with a journalist. That is going to really keep you on the straight and narrow every time.
Absolutely, but obviously, making sure that you have well, your content right is one thing. But then, I mean, you've probably been to a lot of presentations where the delivery is quite flat, and so you just can't engage the audience. So how can we make sure that we deliver with impact?
This is a really interesting topic, and this is probably the one that I spent most time over on the book, because what it's really important is this book is not essentially guardrails to turn everybody who reads it into a speaker like me or someone else. That is not the point. The reason why compelling speakers are compelling is because they're different and unusual. We're not robots. I mean, if you take Barack Obama and Brené Brown, two people that most would agree are compelling, good public speakers, really good in interviews, but they're very, very different. I mean, their styles are very, very different, but they understand what they're trying to say. They use persuasion. They're really clear, and they deliver in a way that lands with their audience, whoever it is. And it's because, whether they know it or not, both of them have applied the golden rules, that they absolutely, absolutely have. And so, when it comes to delivering with impact, what I've thought about is some of the basics that we might assume, but I wanted to make sure that we cover. So, speed, volume, eye contact, some of the obvious ones that are there to help remind people good habits and good skills to put into practice when they're public speaking. It was interesting. I was on a course last week, and there was a really bright, bright delegate on the course, and very, very smart, was delivering a speech entirely read from notes, purely out of anxiety. And he was pushed to do it again, just one element of his speech, but without a single note. And the difference between the way that he spoke, the interest that he looked like he had in his own subject, the interest we had was remarkable, and it was the same content. So I've looked at those and how you can develop. But there are other things that are more nuanced that we can learn from actors and other great speakers. How to tell a good story. There is, believe it or not, a standard structure for a good story. So if you're telling an anecdote as part of your speech, how do you tell that well? Understanding how pace and tone can create light and shade. One of the things that I always use as an advocate and still do, if I'm delivering a jury speech, I have a fairly low register, but I can speak quite loudly and I'll be very authoritative as I go through the facts. And then immediately, when I want to make the point I want to make, I'll lower my voice and I'll be a bit slower. So you can see people lean in. Things like that are small techniques. And this is what I was meaning with the book, that each of these ideas is on its own page so that you can look and build and add these skills as you go along. And ultimately, the final part that I've talked about, as well as covering things like how to do good slides, how to do good presentation materials, which are really important because they can detract as much as they can and add to your speech, is how to rehearse well. Something none of us like doing. You have to rehearse in some way, shape, or form. And I've given guidance about different ways to rehearse and practice that people will find useful and can apply quickly and effectively, and really get their speech skills as impactful as they can, because they've not only got the content right, but they've practiced to a point that the nerves are gone. And if they're not completely gone, they're used to energize the performance, which is really, really important.
Absolutely. That's all fascinating. But well, there is one thing when you're doing a speech or a keynote where it's just you on the stage, but there are different types of public appearances. So sometimes you might be in a panel discussion, for example, where you've got other people alongside you. So are the rules different when it's not just you?
The golden rules are not different at all. And the analogy I would give is, think of any sports player, a tennis player, a Formula One driver, a yachtsman. Each of those people will have core skills. There are core skills about playing a good match of tennis, about driving a Formula One car, about sailing. But you don't just learn to play tennis or drive or sail in nice, warm, sunny weather with great humidity and no turbulence. You will find yourselves, and those sports people always find themselves, in different conditions. The weather is different. The track is different. If you're tennis, it could be clay, it could be grass. If you're a Formula One driver, different track you're driving on, sailing. You never know what the weather is going to bring. You have to be able to adapt to those. And really good public speaking is about that same kind of process, understanding the fundamentals, but then really looking at the rules of the game that you're playing at the time. And so when you think about a keynote speech, a panel discussion, a pitch, competitive pitch, because I talk about that extensively, and then media interviews as the sort of the broad headings, the golden rules apply equally to all of those. The good practice of having a good structure apply to all those, but there are certain differences in terms of the delivery. So for example, with a media interview, you've got less time. You've got to get to your point quicker. You've got to use your skills to make sure that you're still delivering the same message that you might do in a keynote in a different way. In a panel, something I often see people forgetting to think about is exactly how much is the time going to be divided by. If you're on a panel that's half an hour, you don't have half an hour speaking time. You probably cumulatively have 6 to 7 minutes if you're lucky. And that might also intersperse because the host might change the order of the questions, or they might change the order of who goes first. You've got to have done your homework to know, well, how will I think about my messages that I want to deliver at this panel discussion? But also, how am I going to deliver those in bite-sized chunks? Because I'll only have certain questions to respond to. I'll only have certain moments of time, and each moment of time will be shorter. So those are the things that I've helped try to bring to life as much as possible, so that people can apply the golden rules, really think about their content, and then adapt how they speak to the particular situations in a really practical way, so that they're able to deliver and not miss the opportunity of all the hard work that they've done.
Great. But you also mentioned media interviews, and it's something that you cover a lot in the book. So, how do they differ from well, presentations and talks and panel discussions?
The biggest differential is time. Arguably, I don't think that that is the most important differential. I think the most important point is they're not interviews. Yes, you heard that correctly. Don't rewind the podcast. Media interviews are not interviews. I sort of hate the word, because the idea of interview suggests to you, as the person being interviewed, in the way it described, that you are completely at the behest of the questions that you're being asked, and therefore the person asking the question is in control. It's absolutely not the case. If you are a spokesperson on television speaking to a newspaper, you're there for a reason because you are the expert on this topic. You have to own that. And I think that people don't get themselves in the right mindset of actually, this is a conversation. It's between two people. It just so happens that your responses are more important, or only your responses will be written down. But it is a conversation, and one that you're in control of because you're the expert. And so, really being clear about that, and then framing your talking points in a way that is authoritative and compelling and persuasive within that dynamic, it is the most important thing that people have to think about. And then the other difference, of course, is time. If you are doing a keynote, you might have an hour. If you're doing a town hall, you might have 45 minutes. If you're doing a media interview on a trending issue, maybe 15 minutes if you're really lucky. That was certainly when I was doing earnings interviews with CEOs or CFOs around company earnings. You might get 10 to 15 minutes. And if you're on TV, you might get as few as 3 minutes. You've got to completely rethink about the way that you deliver your message, and you've got to flip it essentially. Whereas in public speaking, you can, lay the groundwork and get to the point and make it really clear so that you have a sort of an aha moment. You've got to flip that around in a media interview. You've got to get to your point and then tell them why it was the right point, because you could get cut off. The interview could run short, and you don't want to have that was all we got time for. And you think they're going, but I didn't say my message. You can't do that. So you have to, again, in the same way as panels, really be aware of that time. My father was he was a really great sportsman, played a number of sports, but judo was his sport. And what he said about judo was always true about using your opponent's strength to your advantage. You have to do that. Media interviews are absolutely there to be taken advantage of. Use the format, use the time, and think about, once you've got the good structure, okay, how do I get this delivered in the way that is fitting for this audience in this format, and really nail it? Because once you do that, the success you have is incredible. And I think, I know we're going to come onto this maybe shortly, but I will use this as a moment to say that for communications consultants and advisors as well, I have seen habitually not enough time being spent on that part of the process as well. We all work really hard to secure the media opportunity. It's a thrilling moment when you can put the phone down and say to your CEO, yep, I've got you on Bloomberg tomorrow. It's really great. It's a really empowering moment. But the work does not stop there. You've got to then prepare the materials. You've then got to prepare your spokesperson and train them and rehearse them. And then you've got to make sure that they deliver in the moment and that you follow up so that the coverage is what you want. And I think that that's, again, a real missed trick of actually not prepping spokespeople well enough to know that they've got to take the media interview, not as a challenge, but as an opportunity to drive that conversation and really hammer home the points that you or your company want to make.
Yeah, very interesting. And what I found also working with a lot of different people is that I think most of people, they find it very difficult to deliver their message in shorter amounts of time, rather than they can talk for an hour and it will be much easier to prepare that, which, yeah, again shows how challenging doing those media interviews are.
We have a lo lovely saying that I picked up actually at the bar, and you still hear people say it a lot. If you have a legal argument in front of a judge, you probably prepared written arguments, a skeleton argument, a few pages long. You might have case law, et cetera, et cetera. And you'll stand up. You're invited to stand up, and the judge will say, "Mr. Thiel, I've read your application. What's the issue here?" And you hear, it's a really lovely expression that barristers use, "Your Honor, the short point is." And essentially what you're saying to the judge is, this is not my whole argument, but this is the essence of it in a nutshell. And what's really lovely about that is it signals to all the parties what the real issue is, and that's the skill that you're doing in a media interview. What's the real issue here? So the short point is, but it then invites conversation or question about it. It allows the person you're speaking to then pick it apart. So while I wouldn't say the short point in a media interview, that mindset is actually a really good skill, because if you've got lots and lots to say, I'm sure it's all very important, but what's the short point? What's the short point? And how do you distill that and get into the habit of maybe writing it down or saying it out loud so that you can immediately turn it on a dime? Because that's a real asset as a skill that that people can use.
Yeah, lead with your main point. Great. And then, yeah, talking of communications professionals, because you say that you think this book can really be used by communications advisors who can use it as a resource to train their clients. So, could you share with us? You've already touched on that a little bit, but could you share with us how they can use the book to be better advisors and also probably a couple of tips on how they can actually advise better?
Yes, I mean, the whole book is designed for both speakers and the people that advise them. But I have also put a dedicated short chapter in for comms and PR folks. And that chapter is really, it's a shortcut to success. If I'm honest, it's got the errors and the wins that I've made and showing you exactly what they are and how to apply them, both in terms of skills, but also mindset, because I think the way that we approach this job, it's such a wonderful profession. Communications is such a wonderful profession, and the artistry and the science that goes into it of being a really effective writer and speaker and trainer is it's such a gift, and I really enjoyed my time doing it. So there's that element to it. But I think the other part is, and this is not me trying to sell two copies for everyone, but what I would say is that if speakers that you're working with use this book as a guide, I'd also use it yourself as well, because if you can develop a common language with your spokespeople and a common way of working, you will shortcut to success much more quickly. So, for example, if we're talking about features, advantages, and benefits, both you and the spokesperson know what you mean by that. When you think about the type of rehearsal style or the feedback technique that you're going to use, both your spokesperson and you as the advisor know what that is, and you can immediately apply it. And I think that, the best example I could give, I work with a really, really wonderful CEO, very bright, very enthusiastic. I didn't really have to coach them at all on their delivery. They spoke very naturally. They were really knowledgeable on their subject. But just to your earlier point, they could be prone to waffle purely because they were so invested in it, not because they didn't know what they just was, they wanted to get so much out. And we would rehearse, and I wouldn't have to dissect the answer. I wouldn't have to dissect every individual answer for every individual circumstance. I'd just say point, proof, anecdote. And that would be enough of a trigger for that person to go, yep, you're right. I had the answer, had all the parts, but I got it the wrong way around. Let me go again. And then could deliver the same response, but with a point, proof, anecdote structure immediately. And it was the cue that they needed. Things like that, not only help you as a comms person, it helps you make your job a lot easier. It certainly makes your spokespeople's lives a lot easier if they can get really clear, distinct feedback very quickly. But what I will say is that if you can really show up as a trusted advisor in communications, it's phenomenal for your career growth. And I certainly credit, my success, not just because I can write really good press releases or know a lot of journalists, being that advisor in the room and really elevating the way that you speak to your leadership, or the way that you speak, even if you're not in comms, to your senior leaders because you were a really good communicator, it does an awful lot for your career, and it can be used in that way as well. This is really anybody who's aspiring for career growth can put elements of this book into practice from day one.
Absolutely. And Benjamin, I've got one final question as a conclusion of this very interesting conversation. So we've spoken about the different rules of good communication, how we can improve our delivery and so on, but why do we need that? Why is it so important to be effective communicators in today's world?
I think for good or for bad, the evolution of technologies, plural, has meant our attention spans are shorter, and there are so many competitions to people's attention. And to be able to cut through the noise with good public speaking, with good presentation skills, just quite frankly, being able to show up to your boss and go bang, bang, bang. What do you think in an effective way will really cut through the noise, but also just show you and establish you as an expert and someone to be trusted in the field. And so I think for anyone on their career journey, whether they are in the C-suite and they have to public speaking on a regular basis, the book will help that skill and elevate that skill. But whether you are an entry-level employee looking to grow your career, there are skills fundamental in this book to being a good communicator, being a persuasive communicator, and really showing up is so vital now for our career growth and the way that we all need to show up at work, and the way that we need to show up with the leaders of the businesses that we work with, and our investors and our stakeholders and our employees, whatever that case may be. It's absolutely vital to gaining trust. And being a good public speaker is not about show. There's of course showmanship in it. It is about confidence. It is about confidence in what you have to say, belief in what you have to say. When people have the opportunity to go and work for whichever company they want, when people have the opportunity to invest in whichever company they want, or shop or whatever company they want to know that the leaders of those businesses or those companies are believable, persuasive, have a clear vision, and can make that very plain and understandable very quickly. And I think I'll close with a full circle moment. I talked at the beginning of this podcast about, Warren Buffett. One of the other things that he's consistently said throughout his career is, people don't invest in businesses, people invest in people. Good persuasive communication, public speaking, presenting is vital to having people invest in you in whatever it is. And it's an investment we should all make in ourselves for our careers, but it'll be an investment that pays off as we grow our own careers, whatever stage you're at.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. Since I think this was a very interesting conversation, Benjamin. And of course, I encourage our listeners to grab a copy of your book, How to Be Utterly Brilliant at Public Speaking, Presenting, and Talking to the Media. And but thank you very much for your time today. I really enjoyed talking with you.
Thank you so much, Ted.
Thank you so much for joining us today. Make sure you keep an eye on our social media at Lit Publishing on LinkedIn, X, Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook for more information about new books and podcasts with thought leaders. See you next time on Lit Radio Podcast.